Mia is overwhelmed by their love for one another. She is exalted by the simplicity of what they believe. At first, too stunned to laugh or to cry, she can only listen, amazed. 9. As the busker began the fourth verse, Susanna joined in, at first tentatively and then, at his encouraging smile, with a will harmonizing above the young man's voice. For breakfast we had bulldog gravy. For supper we had beans and bread. The miners don't have any dinner. And a tick of straw they call a bed. 10. The busker quit after that verse, looking at Susanna, Mia, with happy surprise. "I thought I was the only one who knew that one," he said. "It's the way the Freedom Riders used to..." "No," Susanna said quietly, "not them. It was the voter registration people who sang the bulldog gravy verse. The folks who came down to Oxford in the summer of 64 when those three boys were killed. Schwerner and Goodman," he said. "I can't remember the name of the..." "James Cheney," she said quietly. "He had the most beautiful hair." "You talk as though you knew him," he said. "But you can't be much over 30? Susanna had an idea she looked a good deal older than 30, especially tonight. But of course this young man had $50 more in his guitar case now than had been there a single song ago. And it had perhaps affected his eyesight. "My mother spent the summer of 64 in Neshoba County," Susanna said. "And with two spontaneously chosen words, my mother did her captor more damage than she could have imagined. Those words flayed open Mia's heart." "Cool on, Mom," the young man exclaimed and smiled. Then the smile faded. He fished the 50 out of the guitar case and held it up to her. "Take it back. It was a pleasure just to sing with you, ma'am." "I really couldn't," Susanna said, smiling. "Remember the struggle, that'd be enough for me. And remember Jimmy, Andy, and Michael, if it does you. I know it would do me just fine." "Please," the young man persisted. He was smiling again, but the smile was troubled, and he might have been any of those young men from the land of ago, singing in the moonlight between the slumped ass ends of the Blue Moon's shacky little units and the double-hammered, heatless moonlight gleam of the railroad tracks. He could have been any in his beauty and the careless flower of his youth, and how in that moment, Mia loved him. Even her chap seemed secondary in that glow. She knew it was in many ways a false glow, imparted by the memories of her hostess, and yet she suspected that in other ways it might be real. She knew one thing for sure. Only a creature such as herself, who'd had immortality and given it up, could appreciate the raw courage it took to stand against the forces of Discordia. To risk that fragile beauty by putting beliefs before personal safety. "Make him happy. Take it back," she told Susanna, but would not come forward and make Susanna do so. Let it be her choice. Before Susanna could reply, the alarm in the Dogon went off, flooding their shared mind with noise and red light. Susanna turned in that direction, but Mia grabbed her shoulder in a grip like a claw before she could go. "What's happening? What's gone wrong?" "Let me loose." Susanna twisted free, and before Mia could grab her again, she was gone. 11. Susanna's Dogon pulsed and flared with red panic light. A klaxon hammered an audio tattoo from the overhead speakers. All but two of the TV screens, one still showing the busker on the corner of Lex and 60th, the other the sleeping baby, had shorted out. The cracked floor was humming under Susanna's feet and throwing up dust. One of the control panels had gone dark and another was in flames. This looked bad. As if to confirm her assessment, the Blaine-like voice of the Dogon began to speak again. "Warning," it cried. "System overload. Without power reduction in section Alpha, total system shutdown will occur in 40 seconds. Susanna couldn't remember any section Alpha from her previous visits to the Dogon, but wasn't surprised to now see a sign labeled just that.